Hello, you're very welcome along to the Home Show here on News Talk. I'm Sinead Ryan. Coming up this week, have you ever thought of living far, far away? Well, scientists have discovered the perfect spot on the moon. I'll be finding out all about it from space guru Leo Enright. Celtic Tiger apartments, are they a bargain or a risk? We'll be finding out. Putting the tech in your toilet, we'll talk smart bathrooms. And Natasha Rocketvine will be bringing the Olympic spirit and style to your interiors. If you'd like to get involved in the show today, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on Instagram and Twitter at SineadRyan100. And of course, you can find the whole show or any element you want on the podcast, which is newstalk.com, or on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Now, despite myself, I'm kind of glued to the Olympics along with everybody else, especially the sports, in my case, that would be considered a little bit out there, a bit bizarre. But whether it's the pink pommel horse or the glorious eventing in the Palace of Versailles, there's one thing Paris has no shortage of, and that is style. And I'm looking forward to seeing Natasha Rocketvine later. She'll be in studio to discuss how we can bring in some of the Olympic elements and colour to incorporate in our home, that timeless quality that Paris and France does so well. Mind you, there are no better colours out there than gold, silver and bronze. So well done to all of our athletes competing and winning in the past week, and long may it continue. You're very welcome along to the Home Show. Now, ever since Neil Armstrong took those first steps on the moon 55 years ago, it was assumed that human settlements would inevitably follow, a matter of when, not if. But living on the moon is significantly more treacherous than you might have imagined. And we wondered what a lunar living room might look like. Well, the discovery of a moon cave last month has made the task a little bit easier. Leo Enright is space commentator and all-round national treasure. And I'm delighted to say joins me on Earth in the Home Show studio. We've been having the great chats, Leo, when you came in there. So I'm looking forward to this interview and to this item, because there's nothing that you don't know. So let's start with, how did this discovery come about?
Well, this is really very interesting, because we've known about these holes in the ground on the moon for quite a long time. Lunar orbiting spaceships have been taking photographs of these things for 20 or 30 years now, actually. And then this group, mostly here in Europe, decided to go back and look at the radar data from many years ago, where the spaceship wasn't directly over this hole in the ground, which most people thought might be what we call a skylight into a cave. But nobody could be sure, because all we could see was the hole in the ground. But what they did was they took the radar data from either side of the hole in the ground. And wow, what did they find? About 200 meters below the surface of this skylight, they could see indeed that there was a cave continuing beyond the hole in the ground. And that's what's exciting, because those caves could go for kilometers for all we know.
So why particularly is it exciting? Is it because it's easier, if we are to send people up there to live for any significant time, it's easier to build and to live in this volcanic tunnel as opposed to on the surface? Is that the main benefit of it, or are there other benefits?
Well, it would be much simpler to just build, you know, a big aluminium tent on the surface. Mm. But the problem is radiation. The moon is unbelievably hostile. The reason we're worried about radiation is that astronauts living and working on the moon will only be able to stay there for very short periods of time because of the massive doses of radiation they will receive on the surface.
So would this cave structure protect from some of that then? Is that the thinking?
Absolutely. Most of the radiation that really worries the scientists is particles coming from not just our solar system, not even just our galaxy, but from galaxies far, far away. These are ions of iron. I mean, these are really heavy particles that are arriving at the surface of the moon at the speed of light. And they can do enormous damage, not just to people's brains, but also, frankly, to their gonads and to other important bits of their body.
Right.
So the chances of somebody developing cancer if they were living on the surface of the moon are just outrageous. You couldn't do it. Whereas if they were underground in one of these lava tubes, that's what they are, basically. They're what's left when there's been a big flood of lava after a volcanic event. These lava tubes are down deep enough, 200 meters or so, that they would completely protect a woman or a man living there.
And that, of course, would be a game changer. So what other, I really don't want to call it kind of home comforts, but what other living requirements would they have? I mean, like, we know that any of the rockets that have gone up there, any of the spaceships, and indeed the International Space Station, this isn't a comfy, homely place to stay. This is like kind of living on a bit like, you know, the research centres in Antarctica or something. They're workspaces and they're clunky. Can we expect better if people were actually to live for a long period of time somewhere like the moon?
Well, you frame your question very well, because in fact, you know, living even on the International Space Station, which is protected from some but not all of that radiation by Earth's radiation field, so it's astronauts can spend a lot longer living on the space station, but it's still like extreme camping. Antarctica is actually not an exact comparison, because in Antarctica, if your head is being done in by the people that you're working with, for instance, you can walk out and take a stroll. It is actually in Antarctica possible to get away. You can see, you know, you can look at the stars at, in the winter months. You can go out and see the midnight sun. Whereas on the space station, you're stuck in a tin can. And it's absolutely rudimentary. So the comforts of home are lacking. And that has fundamental implications for human settlement in outer space.
Yeah, and we're talking about psychological impacts as much as physical surroundings. Now, there has been some tests of this or some experimentation towards it, because there is a facility out in Texas which is planning for a Mars habitat, this Chapia mission. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation of it. It's a kind of an anagram. And they have, the first lot of scientists have exited, I think, after a year of living there and having to get on with each other, build your hydroponics bays, get your food done, make sure you move around, and dealing with that mental stress to go with it. Can you see that being essential before anybody lives on the moon for any period of time? Or is the moon so much nearer that actually you could flip people up and down? Could even tourists end up going there?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest issues is psychological. The only medical emergency in the history of human spaceflight, the only time somebody had to be brought back like today in an medical emergency, was in fact a nervous breakdown because of the extreme stress of living in a tin can. This was a Russian cosmonaut aboard the Mir space station. And the poor man became catatonic. And this is a constant worry of doctors. They don't worry about most things. They worry about bone loss, yes, that is a big worry. But broadly speaking, people do more or less get by fine physically. It's the mental stress of living in these really, really unnatural situations. And that is precisely where this idea of home comforts comes in. That, you know, if we're going to continue doing this, we need to bring more of the, you know, Laura Ashley type design into the way that we build space stations. And, you know, astronauts do bring small little things with them to help them. And of course, they've improved the toilet system a great deal. I've tested the toilet on the space station.
Have you?
Oh, I tell you, it's. they have a camera at Mission Control in Houston. There's a camera in the toilet bowl. And the idea is that the camera has crosshairs and you sit on the toilet and there's a screen and you position the important bit over the crosshairs of the camera. So it's, you know.
I've heard it all now. Leo Enright talking about Luz and Laura Ashley on The Home Show. That I was not, that wasn't on my bingo card for today, Leo. It has to be said. We've Ciara O'Brien in after the break talking about smart Luz at home. Now I'm not thinking I want one at all.
Well, the space station Luz don't flush. They suck.
Okay.
Because, of course...
Be extra careful then, don't you?
There's no gravity, of course. Mm. So when you have an accident in
like
space,
an aeroplane loo then, is it?
Or, it's a bit like an aeroplane loo, except that it's that it's sucking all the time because there's no gravity.
And it really,
there have been very bad moments where astronauts have been scrambling around. And there is at least one case... And, you know, we're still on nice homely talk here, but there's still one example of a piece of, you know what,
matter
that is floating inside a lunar module that is circling the sun. One of the astronauts had an accident. The thing, they couldn't find the thing. And so they blasted the module into orbit around the sun. And someday... thousands of years from now, people will wonder, where did that come from?
Right. Well, let's hope it doesn't land on the Laura Ashley couches they're going to have in the lava tunnel. What other things do we know that astronauts, when they eventually get to go there, will want? I mean, we're looking at things like, you know, for relaxation, for amusement. I mean, they know they're going to have to do all the experiments. They're going to have to go on the treadmill and do all the exercises for bone density. But what other things? I mean, can you see, I don't know, pinball machine down there or books or what kind of home life would it be when we eventually, will we eventually colonize it, do you think?
Well, I don't think so. I think your analogy with Antarctica is probably accurate. I think most of the people who live on the moon in the next century at least will be miners.
It could be a research. Mining minerals.
On the moon. That's, I think, the reality. But there will be holiday camps potentially, and I could see that potentially within 60 or 80 years, you could have holiday camps and sports stadiums. Now, sports will be a huge part of human presence on the moon because, of course, one-third gravity completely changes everything. And so what you would end up with a completely different Olympic Games. Because, of course, obviously the high jump would be six times higher.
Yeah.
You would be literally expected to clear bars which are a quarter of a kilometre high.
Fantastic.
And, you know, if you didn't do that, and you would be expected, for instance, on the long jump to be able to jump something just short of a kilometre.
So the Olympic Games 2124 could be hosted on the moon.
I think it could be quite the most amazing thing. The other thing that would be fantastic, and this is really for, you know, architects in Bolton Street and places like that, and again talking about home building, is that when you start building stuff on the moon, the laws of architecture change. And you don't have to. Once you've sorted out the problems of radiation, which is going to be very difficult to do, but once you've sorted out all the other problems, one of the early things I think we're going to see, at least as a demonstration, will be people building houses and monuments on the moon using the fact that it's 1/6 gravity.
Mm.
You can build objects on the moon that would never stand up on Earth because of our gravity.
Oh, okay, interesting. So you'd have sculpture or you'd have building makeups that they have to be nailed down, bolted down, but they could be of an extraordinary shape, perhaps.
Oh, they could be the most extraordinary. I mean, you could build flying buttresses and arches that, you know, would be 6-8 times larger, wider, higher than anything here on Earth. So I could see the temptation of somebody in, you know, 50, 60, 100 years' time to build, you know, rebuild, you know, a cathedral of some sort in the style that you would if you were on the moon.
Wow. Okay. Well, lots ahead. That's very exciting. I wish it was happening in my lifetime. But we'll take what we have for now. I can't let you go without asking you, would you go?
To the moon? Yeah. Yes, I would, as long as it's a safe spaceship. I think, you know, there are still, I think, quite a number of Irish people that I believe will, who are alive today, who I believe will walk on the moon. They're scientists mostly. Some of them, I think, are probably already working. Mm. You've got to remember that Ireland has been central to study, for instance, of radiation on the moon. Most of the early work on lunar radiation and the dangers to astronauts was done here in Dublin at the Institute for Advanced Studies by Dennis O'Sullivan and our Alex Thompson. And by their colleagues there, they examined the moon rocks from Apollo 11 and worked out how dangerous it was.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who issued the warnings for Irish people and for everybody that wants to live and work on the moon. You know, there are other Irish people involved. I mean, when people start living in space in a big way, they will live in things called Bernal spheres. These spheres were designed by the great Irish scientist from Nina in Tipperary, J.D. Bernal. He's not talked about a lot in Ireland. He's the most famous Irish scientist you've never heard of. And that's because he was an ardent Marxist. And that was a no-no in Ireland in the 20th century. So J.D. Bernal, one of the greatest scientists in the world of the 20th century, one of his contributions is the J.D. Bernal sphere, which you will see if you look at some of the science fiction movies like Interstellar and so on. They actually feature Bernal's spheres.
Wow, okay. So that, and I can see what you're looking at, that kind of nearly honeycombed structure of whatever it's made of. It looks like glass in the movies, but it could be. Interesting. So that's what our homes will look like, or the homes of the people up there, and the workplaces. Very, very interesting. Listen, when do you think all this will happen? Give us a date, Leo. We won't hold you to it.
Well, I think the next people on the surface of the moon won't be till at least 2030.
Okay.
There's a very good chance now, realistically, that it will be Chinese boots on the moon before the Americans. That will probably provoke a new space race. But the Americans are definitely struggling. And I think the Chinese have a real chance of being there before them. But of course, the Americans were there 50 years ago.
Of course.
The prospect of having miners on the surface of the moon, which I'm not wild about because we need to have an agreement. We don't want the face of the man or woman in the moon destroyed by strip mining.
Tesla logo.
Yeah,
well, beaming back at us.
Yeah, that could be within 50 years.
Yeah.
But it will be 100 years before there's an Olympic stadium on the moon.
All right. Well, do you know what? We will hold you to that. We'll have you back on if that ever happens. Leo Enright, space guru. Thank you so much for joining us on the Home Show today. You are listening to The Home Show here on News Talk. Coming up after the break, those smart loos, which you may not want anymore, and smart showers, and of course, Olympic design. See you in a few moments. And this is The Home Show here on News Talk. I'm Sinead Ryan. If you want to get in touch with us today, then you can do so by emailing us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, or you can text us 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents. Now, under an interim remediation scheme, the state is stumping up 2.5 billion euros to repair 100,000 defective apartments and duplexes which were built during the Celtic Tiger boom. So should buyers steer clear of apartments built during that era, some of them very badly, or is there potential for a bargain if you are careful about the process? Well, nobody knows this better than somebody dealing directly in the Dublin market in particular, and that's Eoin Riley, Director of Eoin Riley Estate Agents. Eoin, you're very welcome back to The Home Show.
Thank you, Sinead.
Now, I know that, you know, you operate right in the heart of Dublin City. So tell me what kinds of defects have been shown to be present in some of these so-called Celtic Tiger apartments. And I think we all know the ones we're talking about. They were built in a mad rush with very little regard to planning, lots of money at disposal, and lots of developers hoovering up massive profits.
Yeah, it was very much a frenzied period, I suppose, Sinead, when you consider, you know, this year we're hoping to build a little over 30,000 new homes, perhaps a little less than last year. In 2006, we completed 90,000 new homes in Ireland.
Wow.
So it really was a frenzied period. And unfortunately, during that period, standards in terms of finishes and minimum statutory and regulatory requirements, a lot of developments unfortunately fell well short. In my experience, some of the more serious defects in some of these developments would include minimum, not even meeting the minimum standard when it comes to fire safety systems, water ingress, sometimes structural issues in the roof, in the foundations. So they're some of the more serious defects I've seen.
Yes. And of course, often it's the owners themselves who get stuffed on this, because when you buy one of these apartments or in one of these complexes, you know, you contribute maybe an annual amount towards servicing and sinking funds and all that kind of thing. But that wasn't always the case back then. So, you know, in the government stumping up this money now, are they more or less admitting, look, this was so badly done, we now have to step in and put it right, because we can't expect the individual owners to do so?
Yeah, like in some cases, the cost of fixing these defects are huge. And to give you some, again, to draw on some of my experiences, I'm aware of some developments where the management company have asked owners to pay up a levy of 15,000 to 20,000 euros. So these are huge sums. Mm. And it really, due to the system's breakdown and the lack of oversight and inspections during that frenzied period, it's totally unfair to leave the buyers picking up the bill, who all bought their apartments and in many cases paid top of the market prices for these. And many of these homeowners have been locked in the apartment in that they haven't been able to sell them, or certainly be able to sell them at a fair market price to a mortgage buyer. So one of the implications of apartment developments that have these defects is that in most cases, buyers with mortgages cannot buy them at any price.
And that's because the banks don't want to touch them with the barge pole, so they're not going to lend on them. And we saw that when it came to pyrite and mica issues, which are separate. But the banks have a point. I mean, the last thing they want to do is throw good money after bad. So in looking at these developments then, do you think this is then a good thing? Will it cover them all, or is it only a drop in the ocean, Owen?
You know, that's a really good question, and I think that is unclear. You would like to think at this stage that every OMC, owner management company, is aware of what the issues are in their development. And unfortunately, it was hoped the scheme, the government remediation scheme, will go live this year. That now looks unlikely. How it's actually going to operate is not clear either, but it will be up to each management company to apply for funds. And what will be interesting is what is viewed as defective or what is now obsolete. Mm. So that's going to be, it's going to be very interesting to how this scheme works. But absolutely, these people need help because, as I said, they bought their apartment in good faith. And when you think about it, you're offered more protection when you're buying a pair of shoes from a shop or from a car than these people were offered.
Mm. Now, of course, it wasn't all bad news. Now, obviously, the building standards now are a world apart. You know, they're just top notch at the moment. And every apartment or house built today can have A rating and, you know, triple glazing and underfloor heating and all that stuff. But there were upsides of some of those apartments. So for anybody now who's kind of eyeing the market, especially, as they say, with non-mortgaged cash, who's looking at a bargain here, something that may be rectified at no cost to them, what were the good things about some of these apartments and developments that were built?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's an ongoing debate that buyers have, that we would be dealing with, as in, do they look at an older apartment or something more modern. So some of the advantages with the older apartments, and when I say older, I'm talking about apartments in general built in the 80s, the 90s and into the early noughties. Mm. So some of the advantages would include they tend to be in more established locations, closer to amenities. The developments themselves tend to be smaller, and some people like smaller developments. The floor areas can be larger, There can be more sense of community in these developments because some of them are now 20, 30 years old. Management charges can be lower because if they're not as tall, they may not have a lift or have as many lifts. In some cases, they don't have basement car parks. However, buyers do need to be careful that there isn't going to be a call for future levies in the future. And these older apartments, you can also add a lot of value to, as in you can renovate and add value. Some of the downsides, I guess, can include, Sinead, sometimes the common areas might be run down. There are definitely going to be less energy efficiency. For whatever reason, we find some of the older buildings and their house rules include a blanket ban on pets, which we think is very short-sighted. And in some of these developments, some key infrastructure might become an obsolete, like lifts and roofs. So it's important the OMCs have planned for this future expenditure.
Is there an upside on price? Are they cheaper than the new ones being built?
They can be a lot cheaper. As in, the difference could be as much as 30, 40% per square foot.
Wow. Okay. But like, given you probably have to pump a bit of money into it and you may be living in a building that isn't as trendy or cool, but as you say, it could be in a better area and it could be that little bit larger than its compatriots. So, Owen, are you finding people now interested in buying these older apartments even before this remedial scheme comes into place?
Yes, absolutely. But I think buyers are aware of the issues of apartments, particularly built during that frenzied period. Mm. So, and what they're particularly sensitive to is anything to do with fire safety. I think most buyers will take a view on water ingress or where some improvement works have to be carried out. When buying an apartment, you do become aware, you do become a member, I should say, of a common ownership structure. So the management company, they own all the freehold in the apartment complex. So they own the roof, they own the ground it's built on, they own the lift. Mm. And they issue long leasehold interest to each owner, which tend to be 999 years. And then it's run very much like a company. Each owner has a vote. The management agent who manages all the common areas for the owners will come up with an annual budget, and that's voted on at the annual general meeting, the AGM. Mm. And in the budget, every penny is accounted for. And what the financial information will also tell an owner is, what is the sinking fund like? And I suppose, Sinead, what would be a red flag for a buyer of an older apartment in an older development is a low sinking fund, because that straight away would indicate that in the future, the management charge is going to increase substantially, or they could be looking for a levy from each owner.
Yeah, and I suppose this is why it's so important to have a solicitor who's on top of all this and can find this stuff out for you, so at least you're not buying a pig in a poke. If you are paying a low price or a better price, you need to know all of this stuff. And of course, that comes under the whole area of mud. Now, I'm not talking about the clay under your feet, but the multi-unit development. And there is great information online, actually, on the whole way MUDs are operated, and you can actually request information on a prospective apartment, can't you?
You can. It's called MUD requisitions. So that is a standard list of questions and answers that a solicitor on behalf of the buyer can ask the management company. So that would include things like, have the common areas have been transferred to the management company? Who is the management agent? Who is the auditor? But also, what is in the sinking fund? Is the management company aware of any defects? And is the management company aware of any future expenditure? So they're the main areas to keep an eye out for. And to touch on a question you asked earlier, Sinead, about the developments maybe with more serious defects, we don't tend to see owner-occupiers buying those. Mm. It tends to be investors buying with cash funds who are kind of taking a view and perhaps reacting to the value, because based in my experience, apartment complex with more serious defects, they're probably selling for about 10 to 20% discount. right. what they should be achieving if the management company was
so,
in order.
So they'll rent it out and sit in it as an asset and then flip it when the time comes. Okay, Owen, well listen, lots of food for thought there. A caveat emptor as always, buyer beware when, of course, ever you're buying property, but maybe a little bit more so in terms of these Celtic Tiger apartments. And we will see with interest the where that interim funding goes. Owen Riley, thanks a million for joining us on the Home Show today.
Thank you.
Let me know if you've bought one of those apartments from the 90s, the early noughties, and how you find it, and if it was a good bargain, and if it was worth it. And that, of course, was a bit of a nostalgia from the film Bambi with Drip, 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 Little April Showers. And the reason we are talking about that is, and we seem to have a bit of a theme going on the show today, because anyone who's has joined us from the top of the show heard the 100% brilliant Leo Enright talking about colonising the moon and what would be required and all that kind of thing. And one of the things he was talking about was his own experience of being on the smart loo, the smart toilet of the International Space Station. I have to say, if it didn't put off your coffee, well then do stay with us because we do live in an incredible time, the modern world where any human being can be connected anywhere else by the internet. And sure, why not your bathroom? It may not be as private as you think. Ciara O'Brien is business and technology journalist for the Irish Times and joins me now to talk all about what is available right now for the smartest of bathrooms. Ciara, you're very welcome back to the Home Show. Now, the bathroom would seem to me to be the one place where you'd want to leave technology behind, you know, a peaceful, quiet place. Yeah. We don't spend a lot of time there. Nevertheless, technology disagrees with us.
Yes, I mean, look, technology is everywhere now. I think anybody who has, there once was a point where the idea of bringing your phone to the bathroom was just completely out there. Now, I don't think there's anybody who actually doesn't bring their phone in when they go into the toilet. So the technology is already there. You just have to make it work for you. And look, there's lots of different things that you can get. I mean, I was getting ideas from, I'm kind of planning my own bathroom refurbishment as a result of this now, because there's so many different things that you can put in there. And look, it doesn't have to be a full-on kind of, you know, high-tech thing, because look, there are obviously some privacy issues, and if there's one place you want privacy, it is the bathroom.
You would have thought. Now, these smart toilets, we featured them before because there's this Japanese model, and my goodness, it literally does everything for you. So these are incredibly popular, according to the interior designers we have on the Home Show. And what's available?
Well, smart toilets kind of scare me a little bit. Now, I'm not going to lie. I like things to be simple when it comes to that. But if you are into that kind of smart toilet and you have a bit of a bigger budget, I suppose, because look, these things can be very expensive. One of the kind of the most out there ones I saw was the Numi 2.0. Now that will set you back, God, it's well over 10,000 euro. I mean, it's $12,000 to buy, right. But it looks really strange as well, you know, because it's kind of all angular and we're not really used to that over here. But basically what it allows you to do is to fine tune your own toilet experience, so to speak. You have personalized settings, so that can be from the lights, there's built-in ambient lighting. So, you know, if you go to the bathroom at night, you don't want to turn on the overhead lights, because who needs to do that? Who wants to do that?
Okay.
You can have your ambient lighting that, you know, will be there for you. So if you like kind of like a light blue, maybe somebody else in your house prefers a green, you know, you all have your own personalized lighting. There's a built-in audio speaker system. There's a heated seat with hands-free opening and closing. I got to be honest, I'm on board with the whole hands-free opening and closing, because who needs to be touching toilet seats? There's also, I mean, like, look, the other thing obviously then is, do these things use a lot of power? And it has its own power save mode, so it's quite energy efficient. There's an emergency flush if the power goes out. There's a remote control for the whole thing as well. So it's kind of, it's one of those things that you know, you can have, it's probably overkill for a lot of people. If your budget doesn't quite stretch to that, you can just do a smart toilet seat. If your bathroom setup allows for that and your particular toilet is suitable for that. And that has kind of like some of the similar features where, you know, you have like a bidet and it will heat the water for you because nobody wants a cold wash.
Spray. Yeah.
Okay. And it will heat the seat for you as well, and it will open and close. And a company called Xiaomi, which, you know, you might be familiar with because they also do mobile phones, they actually offer that. And, you know, you can add it on to your existing setup, as I said, if it's suitable for that.
Right.
And you don't have to rip out the toilet and start from scratch, nor do you have to fork over what's probably a small car budget for
as something of a relief now, I must say. Yeah, I'll be dashing out to buy that.
No
right
pun intended
now.
There when it comes to family reliefs and toilets. But anyway.
Indeed. Now, one of the places I think tech has landed in the bathroom, and something that we all actually do like, and that's a smart shower. Yes. Talk to me about what's available in the market now on smart showers.
Do you know, this isn't something that will break the bank, because if you're getting a decent shower, I mean, most people are going to be spending close to €1,000 or just above that. Mm. And for that, you can actually get what's called a digital shower. And the showers these days, now, I do not have, it's probably one of the only areas of my house where I haven't brought smart technology. The one thing I hate is when I get into the shower and somebody's been messing around with the settings, because I like my shower a certain temperature, I like a certain spray, and I'm constantly having to readjust it. With a smart shower, you wouldn't have to do that. There's like up to 10 presets on them. So everybody gets their own settings, and you can control this via an app, or you can control it via your Google or Alexa speaker, and you can tell it that you want to have your shower, and it will automatically set all this up for you, have it ready for you, maybe have it running so that when you get into the bathroom, you can just step right in there. I really like this idea, but you can spend about 1,300 euro and get a smart digital shower. And obviously, look, this will all run off an app on your phone as well. If you're not into having a million and one apps, this probably isn't for you. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is something that you could do now that won't break the bank.
And what companies are offering those now at the moment?
Mira.
They're already in existence for those. Okay.
Because the one thing you don't want to do is buy something from a company that might not be around in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
Because you're putting a lot of money into this. And this is a lot of the smart home stuff. You know, I've fallen victim to it myself, you know, where you get something from a company that looks really good and they have a really good product, but the market's not there for it. And because the market's not there for it, they just kind of fall off the map. And then you're stuck with this very, very expensive paperweight that doesn't really do much, because once the company goes, their apps kind of inevitably go by the wayside.
Indeed. Now, one of the things I did get in my own bathroom when I remodeled it, I thought it was the height of technology, was a mirror which lights up from behind, so I can have different settings on it. So like that, if you're in the middle of the night and you don't want to turn on the whole bathroom light, you just stick on the mirror light and a little glow comes around the mirror. Now, I thought that was the bee's knees, but in fact, it turns out I'm in the penny halfpenny place when it comes to smart mirrors, Ciara.
Well, there are there's ones that now will do all that lighting, but will also have Bluetooth audio streaming in it, and they're IP44 rated, so you can use them in bathrooms because you don't want to have, you know, electronics in bathrooms. Water and electronics don't tend to mix very well. It has all the LED lighting, and they can demist. There's a company called Luca that does that. And again, they're not massively expensive. Under 300 euro will get you a decent mirror. And when I remodeled my own bathroom, I got a non-smart mirror. I spent 150 euro on a mirror. Mm. So, and the only thing that did was, you know, lit up when I flipped a switch. So, you know, I mean, it's not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. Now, what's coming down the line, there is something that was shown at CES, and CES is one of these electronics shows where you see all the things that are going to be the next wave of technology. And one of them was something called the Neuromagic Mirror. Now, this is a digital health company called Neurologics. And what it does is it analyzes the blood flow in your face to check your vitals. So it'll check your blood pressure, estimate, you know, how likely you are to have heart disease. It'll guess your age based on your skin.
Oh, God.
That's a very dangerous road to go down. And Microsoft did an app that guessed your age based on a photograph. And there was absolute consternation among people I showed it to, because it inevitably overestimated their age.
And also,
insulted.
First thing in the morning when you're staring into the mirror is not the message you want. How old do I look, is it?
not with the pillow creases and maybe the slightly dehydrated skin because you didn't quite get around to the 7-step skincare routine last night. But it will also estimate stress. Now, look, this is not, strictly speaking, aimed at, you know, the home market. It's something you probably could buy if you have deep enough pockets. But this is what's coming down the line because inevitably these things start as high-end stuff and then the technology becomes a bit cheaper. The company branches out. Before you know where we are, we have these mirrors that will estimate. The worst one I saw actually that was the one that estimated your BMI based on a picture. I was like, I do not need to know this. Somebody asked me if I wanted to stand in front of it and I ran away laughing because I don't need to know that. But all of this basically will be analyzed in the cloud. You sit in front of the mirror and you know, you have to align. Again, like, they're smart, but they're not that smart. So you have to kind of, you know, it's like, you know, when you forget your password for a banking app and they want to take a photograph and you have to get your face inside the outline. And it, sometimes it's hit and miss, but they will also do, this one in particular, will do like a metabolic risk assessment. So that's like your fatty liver disease, your type 2 diabetes risk, that kind of thing, all based off your face, which is quite scary, but also in a way it's reassuring that in years to come, you know, we might be able to, you know, have this built into our bathroom mirrors and we'll, you know, we'll be able to kind of keep our health in check just by looking in a mirror.
Good Lord. All right. Oh, I'm not sure I look forward to that day. But anyway, Ciara O'Brien, Irish Times business and tech correspondent, thank you for bringing all that futuristic stuff. It doesn't sound too futuristic, I have to tell you. That sounds like something that's going to be in shops near us very, very soon, maybe sooner than we would like. Ciara, thanks a million for joining us today on The Home Show.
Thank you very much.
As always, you can get in touch with us by text 53106 or you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. Coming up after the break, bringing the Olympic spirit to your home with Natasha Rocca-Devine. Welcome back. You're listening to The Home Show with me, Sinead Ryan. And yes, we are halfway through the Paris 2024 Games. And I'm sure many of you have been getting into the spirit, not only by watching, but by polishing up your pommel horse or checking how your horses are getting on with their dressage. I'm only joking. We are all couch potatoes, I think, compared to our fantastic athletes. But all of us can bring the Olympic spirit into our homes. We're not going to make sure your house looks like the off-the-ball studio or a theme park in any way. This, of course, is the most stylish of shows. And we have the most stylish of guests, Natasha Rocca-Devine, joining us.
Thank you very much.
To look at this. Have you been watching the Olympics?
I have, yes. It's been really interesting. Like, obviously, Ireland is doing really well.
Yeah,
so I'm really proud.
Aren't we delighted?
Yeah, it's really lovely
it's
to see
that. It's just fantastic to see some medals and to see everybody looking so well and doing well. I mean, able to watch it at a normal time of the day.
I know, it is. It's really great. And you know, I love sport. My dad is an athlete.
Of course he is, yeah.
I absolutely love sport. And I think it's just for the inclusivity. There's a lot going on in the world. And it's just a nice thing. It's upbeat. You know? And I know it's competitive, but there's a nice energy around it. And I think we all need a bit of that at the moment, I think.
Yeah. Although the opening ceremony was a bit bonkers, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I think Paris and French people, I think they love to be unique. So, you know, I would only expect that, you know, from a Paris.
A little bit mad and a bit washed out. But listen, what can you say about Celine Dion, huh?
Oh, amazing. Absolutely. And Lady Gaga, I love her too.
Yeah, fantastic. Feathers.
Both of them were amazing.
All right. So we have sent you off to have a look at the kind of the court d'esprit of the Olympics. So this isn't about which has the best flag or what colours are. It's really to do with that sense of style that really the French excel at and do so beautifully at, and trying to pull small elements of it into our own homes. So let's start out, first of all, you've probably noticed, folks, when some of the medal winners get up on the podium, instead of being handed a bunch of flowers, which they normally are in past games, they've been given an oblong cardboard box along with their medal. And in that box is a beautiful drawing, a kind of a stylized Art Deco map of Paris. So that's the element we're going to start with, which is this poster, this official poster of it. And it's just beautiful. The colours are gorgeous.
Style, my favourite Art Deco.
Great style. And it gives us a really lovely kind of look at Paris in that way. So talk to me a little bit about the colour and that sense of style with it.
Well, I think back to the poster, but just French style, I feel like they do have a lot of colour, but it's very eloquently done in block colour. So I think from bringing this, I suppose, style of the poster into your home or into your interiors, I would say use the 60-30-10, or I'm going to get this right, 60-30-10 rule, which would be like blocking the colours out. So it looks like a lot of colour, but it's very organised. And I think that's very French. It's very structured. So as an example, Sinead, for like you can do it in mood boards before, but pick your block colour, and it could be one or two, but you know, generally one. So say it's navy, and that could be your wallpaper and your carpet, or your paint and your carpet, or it could be your couch, but you know, the majority of the room, the 60%. And then the 30% I would move into the art accessories, or like say if it's like a peach rug and a peach piece of art, or kind of a colourful Parisian type of art. And then the 10% being the accessories. It could be the plants, it could be the cushions, it could be like the lampshades, but just kind of bringing it in that block colour, so it looks very mismatched and kind of, I suppose, a bit like the poster, a bit fun, but it's very structured at the same time. And I think that's a very Parisian style of design.
Okay, interesting. So it stops your colour pop becoming kind of too much the main
exactly,
scene.
And that's structure your... to it. And then, you know, you can analyse that in a spreadsheet if you prefer that, or you can use mood boards. But, you know, just making sure that you have, you know, a main theme. And it could be different versions of navy, let's say, but it's still the navy is paramount, like, for example, and then the, moving into peach. And then, for example, you could have gold for the 10%.
Okay, so 60, 30, 10. 10. Yeah. All right. Excellent, brilliant. Now, the other thing, of course, is the style. And we heard, we had somebody in when the Olympic Village was being built out in the outskirts near Saint-Denis. It's massive. It's absolutely incredible. And we had somebody on from Paris who was trying to give us the numbers involved because this is a sustainable city, as it were. Like, this is a town that's going to last long after the Olympics are open. So over. So it's been built with that in mind. However, they were trying to do it so sustainably with carbon neutral and all that. There's no air con. The beds are made of this compressed cardboard.
And there's fishnets being used, like, you know, like it's really, like everything's been recycled and repurposed. It's actually the most eco-friendly Olympics in history. You know, it's the, you know, and the most, like, they've ticked every box. But as you said, it's just trying to keep the style element with that, you know, the practical, the comfort part.
And that is a kind of a dilemma that lots of homeowners have 100%. when you're doing.
A lot of people kind of reference sustainable as stiff, let's say, you know, or boring or plain, or like, you know, it's not stylish, let's be honest. And I think having done the Salvage Squad last year, it really opened my mind to actually doesn't have to be that way. And I think just keeping it really simple, it's, I think, from a very basic point of view with your furniture, you know, bring that Olympic kind of style, maybe not the same scale, but you know, looking at an old chest, whether it's in your, from your own house or your grandparents, or looking in a charity shop and actually upcycling that, I think that's a way of doing it, you know, so you can keep the stylish building. And I think they've definitely done that in the Parisian Olympics. They've kept existing buildings, but you know, upcycling it to your own style and bringing your own style in and changing the handles to have gold handles or pink handles or black handles or whatever that is. Mm. And, you know, putting wallpaper in the drawers of, for example, a chest of drawers or like a console or something like that, or upcycling your couch. You know, you can work with an upholsterer, you know, getting gorgeous fabrics to your granny's couch or your existing couch, or adding wallpaper to a room. You know, like, there's ways of doing it in a very sustainable way. And particularly, I think it's always, for me, sustainability is about working locally, you know, working with local designers, working with Irish brands. And like that, it may be a high-end brand, but it's local. So you're saving the carbon footprint. So there's ways around it. And I think people get very phased by the word sustainable. So it's just making sure that it's still stylish.
Yeah, and it's not always rooting through skips or into secondhand shops. I mean, this can be something as small as changing the handles on your kitchen and giving it a paint, rather than going out
and getting everything new
and getting it all brand new.
Kitchen respray is really great. That
okay, so taking that vibe from the Olympics and trying to mirror what they were attempting to do there. All right. Now, of course, we can't get past the design, the elegance, the timeless Parisian approach.
It's incredible.
It is just fabulous. And one, my favourite venue, I have to say, is Versailles, because I've been there a few times. It is an extraordinary place. Now, it's not far from Paris. You know, you can get there on a kind of a 30 or 40 minute train journey. It's very accessible. And then you are met with this wall of gold, which is the Palace of Versailles.
I'm definitely on my bucket list.
It's nuts. And it's absolutely huge. And you just think, oh, bring back the Louis, because this was just so incredible. And of course, this is where they have the equestrian sports down there. So when we look at style, that for me shouts Paris. But for you, what were you talking about?
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think gold. For me, gold, like Paris, is, I would say, gold accessories, whether it's handles on doors. It doesn't have to be in a, I suppose, a very large scale, but whatever scale it is to you. And I think block colours, like I always think of rich colours, like I suppose like plums and rich greens and rich blues. I don't see anything half done in France. You know, everything has to be the full RAL colour, no, the full...
There's like, nothing... Like you don't always see accidental design. Everything is with purpose.
Totally.
You know, wasn't it Coco Chanel who used to say, stand in front of a mirror before you go out and take one item off?
Oh,
you know,
yeah, I never
yeah,
heard that.
Like one bracelet
and similar
or one
interiors yeah. as well. You know, I think they love block colors, and I definitely think they love. I would say wallpaper is a huge feature. You know, just classic wallpaper prints of their historic, you know, whatever it is, Marie Antoinette. You know, but just definitely classical wallpaper. And then, you know, it can be quite white and serene as well. You know, just simple, like large windows and, you know, like high ceilings and like open spaces. Like they do have, I suppose, I always think grand rooms when I think of Paris.
Yeah,
like
and I know rooms. The whole panelling thing, and I'm talking now about B&Q now, not Louis XIV, but the panelling thing has come back into vogue
in
Ireland.
Yeah.
And I just did one of my bedrooms,
got
panelling done. It wasn't very hugely creative, but it looks fab.
I think it always looks lovely, no matter whether you like it or not. It
and you
fantastic.
Think of that with Parisian interiors, 100%. Don't you? The beading and the painting up and all that.
And the wallpaper above it, Sinead, you know, or like a block colour. Yeah, 100%. And then painting the railings. I always think of staircases, you know, like Parisian. I think it's the large buildings, the large ceilings. And then chandeliers. I definitely think they have gorgeous lighting. I always think of that. And then beautiful throne couches, you know, like kind of like opulent couches. They don't do anything like in halves.
The velvets and the fringes and the jewel colours and all that.
Yeah,
so they're things that we can easily incorporate.
And rugs,
you know,
and things like
and
that.
And they look gorgeous. Okay. Now, one of the other event areas is, of course, the swimming, where our own Daniel Whiffen has done so brilliantly. Yes. It was amazing seeing him. But I wonder, has anybody caught the video of them creating the swimming pool? Because there was no pool there before. This was a rugby pitch. And they floored it and built an aquatic centre out of what was a rugby arena, which is bizarre. And one of the features of it is this incredible sweeping wooden roof.
It's incredible.
Those words do not do it justice.
No, it's absolutely stunning, and it's curved, and they have solar panels on top, so everything is, you know, whether it's being built, it's multi-purpose, you know, it's bringing back in energy to the room, and also it seats 5,000 people. Like, as you said, it was this pitch, and now it's this incredibly multi-purpose space.
And this slatted wood is hugely on trend, isn't
it? So on trend. I love it, to be honest. I'm actually doing it in my house at the moment. I'm featuring it behind the TV. Like, things where I'm like, oh, I hope it looks okay, because, you know, it is a risky thing. And, you know, a lot of the time you can buy panels and you can, but as an example, in my house, I'm putting it behind the TV. So you can buy one panel, Sinead, and just stick it behind the TV, and it's a totally different effect. And then you could buy, for example, floating shelves from IKEA or JISC or a charity shop or whatever, and just put them on with a couple of plants and a photographs, and you've set up this really stylish, sustainable, earthy kind of look and feel to your home. Like, it can really change the space, Sinead. It just brings kind of a wood element. And I always learned, and it's something I totally believe in design, is having elements in your home can completely bring down your stress levels. You know, particularly if you're in an apartment or you don't have access to balconies, it's very nice to have like a waterfall effect, you know, whether you can have that in your home. You know, you can get the Chinese waterfalls or wood in your home or a fire. Like, these things are really good for our mental health.
The basic elements.
Yeah, definitely. It's really important. And then look, you can put that in an office, you can put it in a hallway, and also in your sense you can use it for paneling. But I like the wood effect as well. Yeah. It's a different kind of vibe.
Yeah, perfect. All right. And before we go then, of course, once the Olympics is over, we are straight into the Paralympics. Yeah. So one of the elements that the builders have had to include in all of the arenas and indeed in the Olympic Village itself is one of accessibility.
Absolutely.
Visual accessibility, but also for people who are wheelchair users and all of that. So that open flow really is beloved of designers everywhere anyway. And that's something that we can do very easily.
Absolutely. And the theme is called Games Wide Open. And they said that was a part of it, the inclusivity and, you know, with all the female athletes and just across the board. And so, yeah, essentially simple things like an open plan, you know, particularly if you're going outdoors, indoors, having doors, Sinead, that open out and there's not a step down. Like, it sounds really simple and straightforward, but, you know, people love the idea of loads of steps and excitement. But actually, if you have anyone with disabilities with walking, and also, you know, elderly people, or as we all get older, it's really important to include that. Just looking at the kind of the layouts of flooring and using the type of products that, you know, can be either easily managed with a wheelchair or anyone with a disability. Also things like black and white is, you know, for visually impaired people, it's really, you know, they always say children should have black and white toys when they're younger. It's the same for people with visual disabilities. It's very easy to follow if there's any issues with visibility in a large space. And then just things like that, I suppose, just having textures and have making sure you have rails and spaces, you know, for people to hold, and having, I suppose, thinking outside the box, you know, you can make things really stylish. So if you've got someone in your house who does have a disability, get gold rails, make it cool, make your house the coolest house. Or if you need a ramp, make it a fun ramp. You know, like, I think people just should incorporate whatever it is and whoever it is in the space in a really fun and stylish way. And I think the Olympics is really showing us all that it can be done.
It has. And of course, there's that whole future proofing of the
for
way we live.
Us. And with lighting as well, if you're doing a new home, I'd always say, always future proof, because we're all going to, you know, all of our eyesight goes down, you know, downhill as we get older. So look at the colours, the textures on the floor and the lighting, you know, for inclusivity.
Fantastic.
For all of us.
Brilliant. Okay, well, lots and lots of ideas to take home there.
And I'll put the photos up as well.
Do put the photos up on your website, on your Instagram, which is Natasha Rocker Devine. What's your favourite event or your favourite sport in the Olympics?
Anything with women in Ireland.
Good call, good call. All right. Well, listen, thanks for coming in and doing all that with us, and continued good luck and success to all of our athletes. It's fabulous to watch you. Now, that's all we have time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you'd like to get involved, get in touch, then you can do so on email during the week at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. I am almost constantly on my social media. That's SineadRyan100. You'll find me over there so you can get in touch. And don't, of course, forget to check out the Home Show podcast if you've missed any of the items or want to catch up on any of the tips. Again, that's on newstalk.com, on the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud, or wherever you get your pods from. Just have a look for The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Thanks to producer Aidan McKelvey this week. Researcher was Rory Galvin, and Stephen McClune was on sound. It's the Anton Savage Saturday Show up next. Have a wonderful, fantastic bank holiday weekend. We will be back here next Saturday at 8 a.m.